Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where I would like to start this hour with a question. What do you like most about your face? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me right. My question is, what do you like most about your face? Now, whatever that is that you like most about your face, do you want other people to like that same aspect of your face? Would you like for them to see it often, see your face often, so that they can kind of, well, enjoy seeing what you like about your face? Yes, indeed. How about maybe you put your face on Facebook 2 or 3 times a day, 5 days out of 7, 4 weeks out of 4, or maybe 4 weeks out of 5 if we have almost a fifth week in any given month, a fifth day, fifth Saturday, fifth Sunday, whatever. Making sure that people can enjoy your face. Do you like the idea of being able to put your face on social media and possibly have it seen by, let's say, hundreds of people? How about thousands of people? How about having your face seen by tens of thousands of people? Interesting. How about this now? I know some of you saying, well, you know, I kind of like the idea of being able to put my face, you know, just kind of send a photograph to selected people. I want to just show my picture to, or maybe even take a selfie and send it by way of text to specific people who I want to be seeing the image of me and maybe whoever I'm with at the time that I take the selfie. I can dig it. You may not be so excited necessarily about putting it on social media so that, well, potentially hundreds of thousands of people might see it. I know realistically hundreds of thousands is going to be a big number for most of us, but, you know, some people might be into that. Ready to show the world what you look like. How about this? I can definitely understand those of you who say, well, you know, I want more control than that. I'm just not excited about the idea of taking a picture, putting it on the web, and all kinds of strangers, people I've never met, looking at me. I'm not too excited about that. And some of you are concerned about privacy invasion. You know, you're thinking about the whole issue of, well, social media. Who's watching who you really don't want to be watching? Who's gathering information on you that you really don't want to be gathering information on you? And for that reason, there's still a lot of people who are not using social media. Don't want to be out of control. Don't want to give control to other people who will determine how many people see your image, your face, that face that you love so much. How about this? Talking about control. How about when there's a possibility that you could leave a strand of hair or something else that has to do with you? And someone who you don't even know, who you've never met, maybe never even seen, come by, pick up that piece of you, that part of you that you left behind, and use that to draw, then maybe construct your face. Here's what I'm talking about. Check this out on Seeker.com.
A sample of your DNA and predict what your face looks like? Maybe. Okay, yes, but not really. Craig Venter, a pioneer in human genetic research and sequencing, recently co-authored a paper saying if someone got your DNA, they could use it to reveal your face. In the paper, they sequenced the genomes of over 1,000 people and captured a bunch of metadata. They fed all this into an algorithm. The algorithm compared all the metadata to the DNA, looking for small differences and matching features. This paper argues that we should be concerned about storing DNA on publicly accessible databases for the sake of privacy. They say if compromised, someone could pick out your face armed only with your DNA. Obviously, if true, this is pretty freaky, especially when you combine it with another creepy project from 2013. A New York artist took cigarette butts, hair, and other discarded items, pulled DNA off of them, sequenced that DNA, and performed facial reconstruction. The idea being, this face could be the person who dropped the DNA. The artist told CNN she could reveal possible, quote, ancestors, gender, eye color, hair color, complexion, freckles, their tendency to be overweight, and a handful of dimensions of the face. Put together, I would understand if these two projects make you feel skeeved. This is a march toward Gattaca, but there are still limitations, never fear. The artist says that these are general likenesses, not portraits. Inventor's algorithm matched a diverse group to their DNA 80% of the time, but only half the time when they were all one ethnicity. Critics of Venter's paper say that the numbers just aren't good enough to justify any concern, and one of the paper's co-authors even said that it misrepresented their data. In the end, we only sequenced the human genome in 2003. There's still a lot to learn. Projects like these remind us of the sheer amount of data that we're throwing away every day about ourselves, in stray hairs, skin cells, and lip prints, and so many other places. So, can we reconstruct your face? No. But soon, we may be able to match it with an algorithm based on a hair you left in a subway station. Till then, more research and probably laws are needed.
So how about that, ladies and gentlemen? What are your thoughts? What do you think about that? I mean, is this something that you might be interested in? I know some of you might be thinking, man, that's not so cool. I know I go to restaurants. I use glasses and forks and spoons. Once in a while, we'll be out there and we'll see a strand of hair on the table or a strand of hair on the seat. Somebody left behind a little bit of their hair, a little part of themselves. Thinking, wow, they can just take that little part of us and maybe draw our face with some level of accuracy. Maybe even use the materials that forensic scientists and others use to actually reconstruct our faces. Not cool, huh? How about this? What about, I know some of you are kind of graphically inclined, a bit artistic. You ever thought about using this to construct your own faces? Yeah, I mean, you drink at home too, right? So what if you were to take, and I'm talking about something that you do just for fun, just see if you can pull it off, you know, do your research and find out how forensic scientists, folks working in the field of criminology do this. Go ahead and draw yourself. Of course, you don't have to necessarily be in the field of criminology to learn how to draw yourself. You can do self-portrait. That's done all the time, and people don't know anything about criminology. But I'm just saying, when you get ready to take it to the next step and use the materials that criminologists use to reconstruct the face, or even that anthropologists and others use when they're studying history and previous cultures, and they use what they can to reconstruct the faces of historical figures. Now, I can see that taking a long time, especially for someone who's just not trained in it at all. But I wonder if some of you who are artistically inclined, good with your hands, are interested in seeing if you can reconstruct yourself. Now, listen now. Here's the thing, though. You're not using a picture of yourself to do this. Remember now, you didn't leave behind a picture at the restaurant or wherever they may have gathered your DNA from a strand of hair or lip print. Again, they're using your hair or your lip print. That's it. They just go behind you after you've left. Or they could just say, hey, look, go into the kitchen. We want to take a look at some of your glasses before you wash them. We want to see if we can get some lip prints off some of those glasses and see how close we can come to drawing pictures of the way we think the person who matches these lip prints would look. And then we'll come back and ask you if you recognize any of these faces so that we can see if the faces we end up drawing look like any of the customers who have come in here and eaten before. I'm telling you now, that is something else. Well, I tell you, I know that I'm not that excited about trying to reconstruct my face. But anyway, does this kind of stuff make you nervous, a little bit tense? Well, think about it. I want to share something with you now with regards to impressions. You know, we talk about so much about making good impressions. We talk about first impressions. Have any of you ever been messed up by a negative first impression? Your own negative first impression. And I mean, this mess up was a mess up because you really wanted this meeting to go right. It was important to you that this be truly a good meeting. You were hoping to have some very positive outcomes and something went wrong, whether it's because you just truly were not feeling your best. And when I say you weren't feeling your best, I mean you were sick. Sick, sick. You felt like you had a fever. I know some people say, well, do you have a temperature? Well, we hope people have a temperature because if they don't have a temperature, that could be bad news. Yeah, so, you know, you had a fever, headache, and thing is, you were fine 5 days before that, 4 days before that, the day before that. But this day, the day of the meeting, the day of the interview, you woke up feeling a little bad, but hey, no big deal. This is something that'll come and go. It'll pass. I'll be all right. Don't get any worse than this. I'm going to be all right. And by the hour, it almost seemed like by the minute, you could feel yourself getting worse. So that by the time the interview began, you were a mess. I mean, a mess. You felt so bad, and there was just no way you could be at your best. And as a result, you did not make a good first impression. Anyone think back on an experience you had where you did not make that positive first impression and it cost you? How about when you did make that positive first impression and it really worked out in your favor? Well, courtesy of Psychology Today, Dr. Vanita Mehta says that making a good impression on other people is actually vital to our social lives. Imagine being in a job or something else a lot of people get nervous about, that date. How you come off to another person could spell success or failure in any of those situations. To be well received, a person has to convey qualities like warmth, trustworthiness, and competence. How many of you would have thought about trustworthiness as being one of the qualities you need to be conveying in order to make a good first impression? You know, we think about being outgoing. We think about being someone that people can relate to, connect with. But how about trustworthiness? You know, even if on a subconscious level, being trustworthy, or at least coming across as being trustworthy, is something that means a lot to a lot of people, even if they only realize it on a subconscious level. Trustworthiness. Meeting somebody for a date, you're meeting someone for an interview, and they conclude right off the bat that you're a slickster, that they better not trust you any further than they can see you. Well, that's an impression. And that's the kind of impression that can really make it difficult to get wherever it is you're trying to go. particularly with these people who see you as being untrustworthy. Yeah, trustworthiness is big. There aren't many people who get excited about the idea of marrying someone who they consider to be untrustworthy, even if they themselves are not trustworthy. Isn't that interesting how we can be like that? It's not that important to some people that they be worthy of trust, but they sure want worthy of trust, trustworthy, trustworthy, worthy of trust. It's not important to them that they be worthy of trust, but they want the other person to be worthy of the trust. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, trustworthiness, that can have a tremendous impact on whether or not people have a first good impression or a first bad impression of us. Sometimes we miss the mark. Research on what's known as impression management is pretty extensive, and it maintains that people are quite skilled at presenting themselves to other people in a positive light. And when they don't, it's believed that it's due to what they call resource depletion, which essentially means that they don't have the mental energy to properly navigate social situations. It's interesting that when we talk about social doesn't just have to do with people that we are socializing with on a just a friendship basis, but it also has to do with interviewing for that job. All right, let's look at this one when I come back. Impressions. What kind are we making?